looking and confronting negative emotions won't make all the good things disappear. Because I think I was a little bit like fearful of that. I think I thought like if I gave way to those negative emotions, it would like take over my happiness or take over my gratitude.
Right.
But that's not true. Like, it, you know, they can all coexist. And in fact, you can sometimes, I think I can even have more appreciation for those good things when holding space with the negative as well.
You're listening to Perspective, a collection of conversations with people I admire. And in this conversation, I spoke to Ralitza Kona Kalfas, someone I've known since college, someone I've always appreciated for her positivity and her optimism, someone who I only recently found out is a musical artist. I was on Instagram sometime in February or March. I saw her post advertising the release of her first ever single, Golden Linings. And in my head, I thought, I need to talk to her about this. I had no idea that this was part of her life. Eventually, we found the time, sat down, and recorded the podcast. And in this conversation, you're going to learn why Raleigh started making music when she did, how the pandemic inspired that first single, Golden Linings, what toxic positivity is and what it means to her specifically, and how she's thinking about building her career. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did, and thank you for listening. I remember we met like junior year of college. You lived in Claremont, and then also we were a part of NSOP together, but I didn't know that music was like a part of your life. So where did this kind of all begin for you?
Definitely. Well, I think in terms of kind of the root foundation, music has been a big part of my family history. On my dad's side, his grandpa played the bouzoukia, which is like this Greek kind of like classical, traditional, almost guitar. And it's played like in a club and basically, and like he loved that. And that was like a really big part of kind of his family's life. And then on my mom's side, my grandpa actually played in a band. He dropped out of college and like ended up touring in a band that was like kind of Motown, kind of like beach music. And he played the keyboard. And then also like on my mom's side, in the like my native Hawaiian side, music is just like a really, really big part of storytelling and like oral history. And so I think just in general, like always music growing up was just such a key part of like my family and like was always very much like, I guess, prioritized and, you know, just viewed as a really important thing. But from a really young age, I guess I just started to sing, and both my parents don't sing, and they were like, oh my gosh, like, where is she getting this from? But so they were really kind and like fostered that in me. And so I think whenever I just started going into like middle school and high school, I was in the choir and stuff. And in high school, I was a part of a really cool jazz rock ensemble. They're called In the Pocket. They're still around. And basically, it was really unique because it was like made up of different students and a couple of teachers. And we kind of like had a horn line, like drummers, singers, guitarist, like saxophones, all that. And the teachers would arrange music for us to play, and we'd get to choose the different songs we wanted to sing and play. And so I was in that for like 3 years in high school. And it was like a really, really fun time. So in college, I auditioned for the gospel choir because it was like a different kind of vibe and energy, but I really loved it. And I feel like I gained a different level of appreciation of music on a more like spiritual level, and also just on a cultural level. That was really amazing. And it was also a different kind of singing. So I love that piece too. So yeah, long-winded answer, but I think it's always been something that I've really loved and tied closely to my identity. I think in high school, I was considering like kind of making it a, like, this is what I want to do. Like thinking about like auditioning for like musical theater schools and stuff. But I did a couple of like camps and I kind of got the vibe that I felt like if I wanted to make it a career, I felt like I would have to become a little bit hardened in my relationship with it. And I felt like I couldn't really personally maintain the same level of like authenticity, and it couldn't be the same level of catharsis that it'd always been. And so I kind of made that decision like, okay, I don't think I want to do this as like a career in terms of having to like kind of rely on it, but it will always be a part of my life.
Got it. Well, there's so much there to click into. So I want to go back like piece by piece. You said that your grandfather was into music, toured the world. Both of your parents were into music, and then you were like the first one to sing. So like, talk to me about like, what was your household like? You know, when I think about people's family lives, some people, they come together around like the television. Some people come together around like board games. It sounds like music was like a huge part of your family life. So tell me more about that.
Definitely. So we always joke, my mom, we call her benevolent stage mom, and that at every single family function, I would sing. And later down the line, my little sister, who I'm super close with, she's 4 years younger than me, name's Lana, and she also sings, and she's a beautiful, wonderful singer. And so it started with me and it became both of us, and we would basically sing at every single family event. We would do like little concerts, basically. A lot of my friends in high school also sing, and we would like, they'd come over to my house, my mom would cook a bunch of food, and then like we'd sing for our dinner type thing, where everyone would like go around and sing a different song, maybe like 2, 3, 4. And so I think that was like always so much fun. And, you know, we joked that it was like a stage mom thing, but, you know, we really did love it. And we would even have like, you know, sometimes family friends over and we'd sing for them. So it was definitely a huge part of like our family. And I do remember just being young and like feeling very, very lucky that like my mom and dad showed me music like Al Green and Sade and, you know, a whole range of stuff. Cause with my dad, he showed me a little bit more like the hip hop side of things since he grew up like in New York. And then my mom had like a different kind of like Motown vibe, but yeah, it was always just a really big part of our family life.
So I'm glad that you named some names like Al Green, Sade. Like when you would do these performances, kind of like singing for your supper, like what were some of the classics that you would like do over and over?
Definitely. So I think growing up, I definitely was really into musical theater. So there was kind of like a musical theater side of things. And then there was more of a like pop R&B side of things. So definitely a lot of Adele. I think Adele was a lot of stuff that I'd sing. Sarah Bareilles, again, with the musical side of things, like it kind of depended on what we were into in the moment, but like me and my sister sang Wicked, the song For Good, which is a duet a lot. I'm trying to think now. I mean, since I was in like a band, I had certain songs that I would sing. So sometimes she'd be like, okay, sing it now, or I'm gonna practice this. So that was like Son of a Preacher Man was one that I sang. By Aretha Franklin, or popularized by Aretha Franklin. And yeah, kind of ranged. Hotel California was randomly a song that I sang. So it also could go into the kind
classic.
Of rock. It was funny because I was like a high schooler and I was so naive. And I was like, so what is like the candle? I was like, wait, is this like about drugs? Like, is the candle like lighting up the drugs? So
do you ever have, this is something that happens to me a lot where some of my favorite songs, I connect so much with like the rhythm and the sound of it that sometimes I don't actually pay attention to the words. And then what'll happen is like 5 years later, I'll be like, oh, that's what that means. It sounds like that kind of happened with you and Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's funny because I've talked about this with some people, how some people seem to like focus more on, you know, the beat, the melody, and some people focus more on the lyrics. And I think I do both. And it kind of depends on the vibe and stuff. Because also my own music taste really differ, because I do like some more like stripped down singer songwriter stuff, and I do love some stuff that's like super amazing mixing, amazing production. So I think I can kind of lean both ways, but definitely get that.
Yeah, like one thing I'm picking up is that, like, because potentially your father and your mother came from like different areas of the country, like you got exposed to like a very wide array of music in the home.
Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, like I said, my dad grew up in New York, and he's first gen Greek American, and he mostly, you know, kind of grew up in the 70s and 80s in New York and Hell's Kitchen and Astoria. So he was kind of exposed to different types of music in that way. And it was things that he mostly kind of picked up in terms of as American music, other than like Greek music. And then with my mom, like she grew up in the South, went to back to Hawaii to live with some family in college. So she has like a little bit of kind of folky, but also that Motown influence from my grandpa. So yeah, definitely a range.
Can you describe what Motown music is? Because honestly, like coming from Michigan, like obviously I know like Detroit used to be this like great booming city that had this big Motown culture, but I'm embarrassed that I don't really know much about it. Like, can you talk about like, what is Motown music?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's, as I've heard it been referenced, Motown is described as the music that came out of like the Motown recording company. And so I think it's often referred to as that because it also fits stylistically and like genre wise. And so I think, you know, some of the biggest names are like Marvin Gaye, Al Green, The Temptations, like a lot of different ones. And it does kind of move across. Also, I think genres are like a little limited often to talk about music.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think generally kind of looking at that time, things did shift. But yeah, I think it comes down to like that production company.
Got it. And I find that some of the best artists are very, very well-versed in the history of music. So what's cool about you is like, you do have like a very extensive knowledge of like the different genres, even though they may be limiting, but not just from like the 2010s, the 2000s, but like back into the 90s and the 80s and the 70s, because you kind of grew up in this.
Thanks. Yeah. I definitely think that's actually been like one of the biggest, I don't know, pieces in terms of wanting to grow in my music, is starting from kind of, you know, we can get into this more, but like, I didn't really have much of a background in terms of making music itself. Like I definitely had more of that singing lens. And so when I started making, I had all these ideas of like, okay, I know all these sounds and components that really resonate and make music incredible, but how do I do that? And like, how do I kind of get to compiling that? And so I think that's also something that I've loved playing around with in my music, is that I have some songs that do lean more toward, you know, say like R&B, and some that lean more toward pop, and have, you know, I try to take a little bit of elements from different things.
Got you. So let's talk about that, because the first song you came out with was Golden Linings. The second more recently, Personally. So when did you actually make the decision to start making music? Because it's possible that maybe there are all kinds of songs that we don't know about that we just haven't been released.
Yeah, definitely. So I started making music after we graduated in 2019. And so like I mentioned, I'd previously been in gospel choir and college and like in a band in high school. And so it was the first time in my life where I wasn't singing and making music kind of in a formal structure. And I really felt that absence in my life. And I was, you know, trying to kind of find a full-time job and trying to transition into quote unquote adult life. And I definitely felt that like huge absence in my life. And I also found it wasn't super easy to get into like making music if you weren't committed to that being your only thing you're doing. And so that's when I started kind of playing around with writing lyrics and melodies, and started to fiddle around with loops on GarageBand. And like at the beginning, it was truly like so simple, just like beats and then like my lyrics and melody, and that was it.
Yeah.
But then as I started to kind of like write stuff and gain some confidence, it became a little bit more complex. And I also have been semi teaching myself the piano. I'm very lucky because my boyfriend has a keyboard, and so I've had like that at my disposal. And so again, it started like very simple, kind of just like having a vision in my head of what I wanted it to sound like, and then figuring that out on the piano. I know like very, very, very basic music theory, but like, I don't really know, like, you know, I don't know different chords and stuff. So I basically, I think, have just a good sense of like sound. I started kind of playing around on that. And so like on one hand, I have the garage band side of things, and then I have like the piano. And so I started kind of writing those more elementary songs in 2018. And then in 2020, with a lot more free time due to COVID and quarantine, that's when I started to really like develop more full songs. And 2020 is actually when I wrote Golden Linings.
Gotcha.
And yeah, so I wrote Golden Linings in 2020. I probably have like 30 songs. And then like probably like another 50 that like are partly done, but you know, maybe like started, but I haven't finished or something. But I think definitely like kind of ever since writing, I've just definitely gotten better and have, you know, again, become more confident. And I've also been able to connect with some other musicians, and shout out to Emma Jane. She's a singer, songwriter, musician, artist in New York City. She does amazing stuff. And we kind of connected, and she's actually given me like advice on one of my songs on the piano, which was super cool. So yeah, that's kind of how I got started. And the two songs I've released, are like the ones I've done through GarageBand, but definitely have more things and wanting to kind of develop more.
I know, potentially 80 songs in the catalog for us.
So I think a lot of artists are like that, in terms of like, you start stuff, it has potential, but you see what kind of sticks and actually is kind of the best.
I'm curious, like, you know, you wrote Golden Linings in 2020, and then it didn't get released until 2022. By the time you released it, like, did you still love it as much as when you first made it?
Yeah. So I think a super interesting thing about that song is, I really wrote it right when the pandemic started, and I wrote it from a place of like a lot of sadness. And it was really a song where I was processing, I think. And so I wrote it, and then I really just kind of left it and didn't touch it for a while. I think because I kind of had an association of that time with the song. And then I had a cool opportunity to connect with this producer mixer. His name's Kari King. He's based in Atlanta. And we were kind of talking, and we were talking about maybe producing one of my songs. And I was trying to kind of go through and figure out like, okay, which ones do I have that are kind of, you know, in a good enough stage for this? And I was going back through, and I re-listened to Golden Linings in the end of 2021. And I was like, wait, this is like pretty good. I was like, I actually like this a lot. but I think it took me like some time away from it. And going back, but I was like, oh, actually this kind of resonates, and I like the general vibe. So we decided to go with that one, and that was the first release.
Got it. So you had to kind of like let it rest and like give it some space, but then you came back to it and you're like, oh, this is actually the one that I want to release first.
Yeah.
Nice.
Exactly.
So let's see. I remember when you posted about Golden Linings, you brought up this term toxic positivity, and I was like really interested in this, because if I remember anything from like the times that we interacted together in college, it was like, wow, Raleigh is like always in a good mood, like she's always someone that I want to be around. And so this idea of like toxic positivity, like tell me more about that, because it's honestly a term that I wasn't familiar with, and like how does it relate to like what you were going through at the time, like in the beginning of the pandemic?
Yeah. So I think in a general sense, toxic positivity looks like dismissing negative emotions and kind of trying to force an optimistic outlook on all situations. I think for myself, for like a long time, kind of until kind of like graduating and reassessing, honestly, like a lot of things just in that period of transition from college being a student to like, you know, working, having a different routine and everything, I kind of realized that I used to find it unproductive or just bad to have negative feelings. And I think I really embraced my natural inclination towards positivity and optimism. And I think like I definitely am genuinely a half glass full type of person. But I think I didn't realize that for me, I was using positivity to kind of block out other emotions. And I think also like in this sense, for other people, sometimes toxic positivity relates to how they interact with others. But I think in this context for myself, it means how I, like my internal dialogue. And so I think it really just came down to feeling uncomfortable with negative emotions and feeling like I didn't really have a right to them. And feeling like I needed to kind of be productive all the time. And I think I just realized that it's really important to be able to sit with uncomfortable feelings and validate them in order to truly move through them. And so music, I think, has been a really incredibly cathartic and beautiful way to do that. But I think I realized some important things in terms of toxic positivity for me was about trying to have control and how like we shouldn't be constantly striving for control because it's not always achievable. And we can really drive ourselves mad in the pursuit of it. And it's ultimately much more freeing to recognize and accept where we do, and especially where we don't have control. And another piece, I think, related to that idea of toxic positivity is around self-worth or self-love. I think I struggled to understand this connection for a while because I've been super fortunate to have a strong sense of what I cherish about myself. Like I would always identify as a person who had like high self-love and high self-worth. Because I recognize the pieces of myself that I think are valuable and worth celebration. But I didn't realize that self-love is also about trusting yourself enough to look at the parts of you that aren't so pretty or maybe aren't as like easily lovable, to like truly see those aspects of yourself and still choose to love all that you are. So I think I realized that I could like feel certain things a lot more deeply in a way that was at first scary, but then so much more rich and ultimately really beautiful. So I think like from that space, my music started to flow out much more easily and authentically. And so that was kind of like my own personal journey in 2019. And then in 2020, with kind of everyone in the world having to look inwards, I think it kind of came up again. And also with Golden Linings, the idea of kind of, you know, not finding a silver lining out of everything. Because right. For example, with COVID, like it was just a really hard time. That was a very long answer, but that's kind of my ideas around it.
Yeah, let's go back through some of these threads. So, you know, we graduated in June of 2019. Did you find that you kind of had like a loss, you had lost a sense of purpose that maybe triggered some of these more negative emotions? And then at the same time, you just didn't want to allow yourself to feel those. And so you were like trying to like toxically like find control. Like, I'm just trying to like, does that kind of like sound right?
Yeah. I mean, I think I realized toward the end of college that I had been doing that throughout college a little bit. Again, internally of being like, you have so many wonderful things in your life. Like, you don't really have a right to feel negative emotions. And feeling kind of like needing to continue to grind and like feeling like I can't pause to process this because I need to just kind of keep going and I need to, you know, keep performing, keep doing. And performing, I don't mean like singing. I mean like, you know, in the kind of general sense. But yeah, so I think I realized that. And then toward the end of our senior year, I think those feelings started to kind of rise and I was like, okay, let me try to understand why I'm sensing a shift in myself. And that's when, I kind of tried to look at them more directly. And I think in that transition on graduating and definitely losing an identity, I think being a student in all its complexity was definitely an identity And having that structure was definitely like a huge thing. That was a transition I wasn't expecting. And I also feel like isn't talked about that much. Like, I feel like I wasn't prepared and no one had really warned me for how big of a transition that would be. But in that transition, I think I tried to surrender more. And so it was definitely like a huge period of growth and definitely a time of like looking at those feelings a little bit more head on. And I mean, I can't say exactly, but I do think it's not necessarily a coincidence that that's when I started like writing music. Yeah. And I feel like I was able to kind of come up with lyrics that were more, just come up with them. And like, that felt real.
Yeah. I mean, you even said when I asked you like how you started to first make music, you are no longer a part of like the choir, the gospel choir at Columbia, right? And so now you don't have that structure where you're going and you're singing on kind of like a regular basis. And so you need to kind of recreate that yourself with your own music.
Exactly.
Gotcha. You know, I really resonate with something you just said. You felt like you don't have the right to feel negative emotions. I remember very distinctly, like when I was in college, I was like, I had this podcast called Make Positivity Louder. And I was like always just talking about like all these, like all the things that I was grateful for. And I would have other people come on the show and talk about what they're grateful for. And I tried to make that like a real big part of my identity. And when I graduated and then I was like living at home, I didn't have that identity of being like a Columbia student anymore. I wasn't really doing anything. And I also went through this period where it's like, no, I'm not allowed to be sad. I'm not allowed to be depressed or fatigued. Like, my life is so great. I need to constantly think about what I'm grateful for. And then I ended up, it's like you're at war with yourself, where it's like you're trying to tell yourself not to feel what you're feeling. And so I really resonate with what you said.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I mean, I think, and the other thing too is, of course, there is nuance. And like I said, I genuinely am a very like optimistic person, and I still am. Like, I think it more so relates again to that internal dialogue. And I think another part too is just like in my family as well, like gratitude has always been a grounding kind of thing, as well as honestly like a survival mechanism. I think like for like my dad and like my grandma who like immigrated here, like, you know, kind of that immigrant mentality of like gratitude for having things in the United States that maybe are not available like in home countries, it can be a very tricky thing to navigate. And holding that kind of like, you know, gratitude plus things can also be difficult and hard. And so I think it's still definitely something I think is important to balance. And I do still feel very grateful and focus on positivity a lot. I think it's just making room for and making space for those negative pieces as well. And recognizing that looking and confronting negative emotions won't make all the good things disappear. Because I think I was a little bit like fearful of that. I think I thought like if I gave way to those negative emotions, it would like take over my happiness or take over my gratitude.
Right.
But that's not true. Like, it, you know, they can all coexist. And in fact, you can sometimes, I think I can even have more appreciation for those good things when holding space with the negative as well.
Gotcha. I really like that. You know, I rest in peace to Kobe Bryant. There's like this amazing video of him where he's talking about how he deals with feelings and emotions. And his philosophy was very, very simple. It's like, I don't fight anything. I embrace every single emotion. I take it for what it is. And I use it, whether I'm waking up feeling really great, really positive, or really sad, or really depressed. I just use every single emotion. I flow with it, but I don't try to fight any of them.
Yeah, oh, I love that. That's definitely, I think, a really great mentality.
For sure. So I want to actually go back to something you said almost at the very beginning when you were in high school and you were thinking about, you know, is music something that I could make into a career, right? And it sounds like you made the decision at that time that, no, I don't want this to be a career because I feel like that will maybe decrease the authenticity of it if I need to depend on it to make money. Mm-hmm. And then now, you know, fast forward to 2022, it sounds like you've got a job, but you're kind of making music on the side. So like, what is your thinking about this like today? Like, do you see music as a potential career?
Yeah. So I think I first want to say, so the my full-time job is in public health, and I really love what I do. Like, I do a lot of work around health equity and around essentially connecting with community members on improving their own health outcomes, and kind of partnering with healthcare different entities. So that's a tangent, but I do really love what I do, and I think it calls to an important piece of my purpose. So I still feel very passionately about that. I think with music, it will always be a part of my life, and I think I view it like as a passionate practice. I think I want to make it and prioritize it as an important piece in my life. And in that way, maybe think about like career differently. But I do think like it'll still, it won't necessarily be something that I'll do in terms of to try to make money. And I think that's kind of just a personal decision. Because I also know many amazing artists who like, this is what they do full time. And like, they still are very authentic to themselves. And like, you know, they love it. But I do think like, it's something I want to commit time and energy to, in terms of like playing live more. Like, I've only done shows in a couple of live settings. So I definitely want to like be in those environments more. And like collaboration, I've felt very fortunate to kind of like meet some people in the music scene in New York. And I would really love to kind of play with them and have them like play on my music, and do some more like recording on that side. But I do also think like there's kind of a stigma, or not even stigma, it's more so the way our society is set up, and because of capitalism, like people can't really pursue hobbies and passions unless they commit to it full time. And so I think like that's something I want to hopefully kind of like break down and be able to still pursue this in a meaningful way, even though it won't necessarily be, you know, what I do in a full-time capacity. So yeah, I think if that answers the question.
Let's talk about that, because I find it's very common for people to both have a career that they really, really care about, but also have all these other hobbies and activities and interests that are separate that they also really, really care about. And I feel like we're all trying to like figure out what this delicate balance is of like, how can I support myself? How can I kind of spend my time? So like from a very like practical standpoint, like how do you like find time for both? And how do you think about, you know, making both a priority?
Yeah. I mean, I think in a certain way, I love singing and I like love making music. So I don't feel like I have to like block out time for just like the practice or, you know, kind of that side of things. I think in terms of like, say, making new music, it kind of comes in different waves. Like there'll be certain periods of times where I feel more creative and I'm like creating newer stuff. And then there are periods where I'm more so like, say, honing in on stuff I've already done, or periods of time where, you know, just generally, I guess, a little bit busier. And I think that's kind of natural. And I think I'm trying to be like, have compassion for myself in the process. But I definitely do think the most difficult piece of this will be the like commitment more to say like collaboration or like recording, which would require like more, say, you know, kind of coordination and planning. So I think what I'm trying to personally focus on is like having kind of specific goals and like taking those one step at a time. So like my current goal is to focus on like recording this one song that I wrote on piano and trying to basically like recruit different instrumentalists for that piece. So yeah, that's kind of my general goal.
Tell us more about this project. You're trying to recruit different instrumentalists?
Yeah, so the song is called Morning Person, and it's actually about kind of some of the stuff that we've been talking about. It's about kind of like realizing what's good for you versus what's good to you, and seeing that there are like different parts of you that kind of like fight with that. And also just about like a lot of times you're not trying to compete with anyone, you're competing with yourself, and like how to kind of like, you know, do that in a like both respectful and productive way. So I really like the song. This is a song that I actually got the feedback on from the artist in New York. So it's my most like developed on the piano.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I am trying to reach out to a few different artists to like kind of see what instruments would sound good on the track. And yeah, I'm kind of in that process. I have a couple contacts from doing like the first two songs on like mixers, producers in the area or in different places. So I'm kind of just trying to waiting to get those things in place first. Also, there's honestly just like the logistics side of it, which is like money. So
yeah. I'm curious, as someone who has never made music before, can you just kind of describe like what goes into actually like making a song and then like getting it onto Spotify? Because like what I'm hearing is like, okay, you want to get all these people to collaborate with, but like who is the person that's like who is your producer? Like, is it the same person every time? Like, are you going to a studio? Like, can you talk a little bit about like the nitty gritty? Like, how do songs get made?
Yeah. So the short answer is they can get made in many different ways.
Right.
Like for my first song, Golden Linings, that's all GarageBand loops. Mm-hmm. And then one live instrumentalist, which is the bass part of it. And then my singing. So I recorded using my own like recording mechanism in my bedroom. And then did like the loops myself. And then the mixer producer, who I mentioned, Kari King, his collaborator did the bass part. And then he like mixed it totally remotely from Atlanta. So that one was a very much more kind of like remote type setup. For personally, I actually got to go into my producer mixer. His name is Harry Burr. We actually went to high school together and we were in that band together. He was a drummer, but he's now a full-time mixer in Brooklyn and he's like doing really cool things. But I actually got to go into Brooklyn and record that song, like using his like great studio. And he kind of worked with my original GarageBand loops, but then did a few like kind of different things with like synths. And so took like kind of the general setup, but then kind of just enhanced everything a little bit. And so that was like also pretty remote, but like in a kind of different sense. And I got to record the vocals live, which was really, really great. And then basically for this next project I'm thinking of, it would be more involved in terms of recording each instrument live. So that's kind of where it'll take the like more coordination and more planning. But yeah, so that would be like the goal. It would definitely have piano, obviously singing. And then I think what I'm trying to figure out now is kind of what would be those other things. I think like a violin would be really cool. Also obviously like drumming, but the composing side of things I'm not as experienced in. So that's what I'm kind of trying to like get input and play around with in terms of like that instrument side of things, because my background is definitely much more heavily into singing.
Right.
Yeah.
Got it. So it sounds like every single subsequent song has gone from like more remote to like more being in person and being collaborating with people in person.
Yeah, exactly. And in terms of getting it on Spotify, honestly, there are a couple of like super simple apps that you use called Lander. And you just kind of pay like a monthly fee, but then they help you kind of get set up and you set up like your profile. And they essentially just make sure you're not like copywriting. And you like upload all your things. And then it takes a couple weeks, but then they launch it onto all platforms for you.
Got it. How does it feel to like have your own music on Spotify alongside all the people you listen to?
It feels really good. I'm not gonna lie. It feels really cool. it's a little surreal, and it's really cool in that, you know, I have been singing and I've been a part of music for a while, but I didn't imagine this would be something I would do in terms of writing and in terms of like putting something out there. So I think it makes me just really excited for like the future, honestly, in terms of sometimes things turn out in such a different way than we imagined them. But sometimes, you know, just like, I don't want to say better, but just different in ways that are really incredible.
Right. Well, when you first wrote Golden Linings, like at the beginning of 2020, like, did you have a vision for your career at that point? Like, what did you expect?
I mean, at that point, it was truly just like, I'm doing this for myself. I'm just doing this as a way of continuing to make music, as a way of, you know, catharsis. And I would maybe send it to like 2, 3, 4 friends and like show my sister and mom and dad. But at that point I was still really just like, I'm super new to this and I'm just gonna see kind of where it leads. It wasn't really until 2021 where I started thinking like, okay, should I just kind of go for this and put something out there, and thinking about, you know, like, what does it mean to put music out there? And what does it mean to release music if I theoretically am not like, say, trying to like make it a career at this moment? But I think ultimately, you know, it's kind of like, it's for myself. And also, I think one of my favorite pieces of music is just that it connects people. And the idea that it could like resonate with one person, like if I know them or not, means something to me. So when I first like released Golden Linings, I was going into it with like super low expectations. I was like, I'm super excited to do this myself. It's like, you know, my friends and family are being super supportive, but like, that's kind of all I was really focused on. But then I got like a super warm and loving and positive response from people, and got like a bunch of, you know, DMs and messages about like how they related to the song or how they really liked it. And I really wasn't expecting that at all. And it meant like so much to me that someone could, you know, relate to the lyrics or the music at all. So that felt extremely good.
What was a DM or a text that like stood out, or maybe like a story that you remember?
Yeah, I think, well, definitely whenever people kind of told me, definitely when people told me that a specific lyric resonated with them. So I had like, I think actually a couple people told me they liked one of the lyrics in Golden Linings that goes, now of course I'm like blanking on it, but it is, because I've never been the type that likes to cry. Instead, I subside in the rose tint I provide. And so I had a few different people kind of like reach out and say they really like that lyric. And, you know, it kind of is around like, I don't, you know, I've never been the type that likes to cry, likes to dwell on negative emotions. Instead, I try to kind of be in that like rose tint, rose colored glasses type of framework in terms of looking at things more positively. And so that was something where it's like, I was writing and I thought it was a little bit, you know, like, not easy to kind of look at necessarily, or it wouldn't necessarily be something someone would pick apart, but I think it meant a lot that someone was like, oh, that specific thing you mentioned, I like that.
I'm curious. When I was in college, I used to interview a lot more artists, and something that I would always hear often is like, it can be kind of intense when someone like breaks down your lyrics, like to have someone like study you so closely and ask you about it. Like, do you ever feel that way? Like when you're releasing a song, like, wow, like I went to a really vulnerable place and like, I'm kind of scared that people are going to like listen to this all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I think, yes. Short answer, yes. I mean, another piece of this is that I started in 2020. I created a TikTok and I didn't follow anyone, maybe like 2 of my friends. And I started posting a lot on there, like little snippets of things I was working on, things like that. And it was a really cool kind of like, no pressure, I'm just gonna like create and put it out there. And I think that kind of helped. It was like exposure therapy in a way of like, you know, putting out my music, putting out my lyrics, things that definitely were vulnerable and like knowing people could see this, but it wasn't the same to say like my Instagram or Facebook where I have a lot of people following me. So I think that was kind of helpful. But yeah, it definitely can be a little intense because the stuff is like definitely vulnerable. But I think in general, like, interestingly, I think I am a pretty open book. So if someone like, you know, generally asks me about something, I don't kind of mind getting into deep feelings.
Right.
So yeah, I think it's maybe just the general sense of like putting it out there for people who only know a certain version of me. And not because I necessarily was like trying to hide it, but because, you know, that's how kind of I think life works. Like a lot of times we don't get to know every single person on our feed, on our timeline, like on an intimate, deep level. So I think that piece was kind of maybe the most intimate.
Yeah, it's like you get to show a different side of yourself because most of the people we know, we only know them in like one context.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm curious about TikTok. This very interesting thing about TikTok, I find, is that especially like, you know, now in 2022, TikTok is kind of like almost on par with Instagram. But let's say like back in 2018, a lot of people started creating on TikTok because their friends weren't on there. And so they knew that it was kind of like a safe space. And at the same time, there were all these like amazing tools that you could use to create really dope things. Like, talk to me about like your experience with TikTok.
Yeah, definitely. So I think it's definitely been more stripped down, the majority of my videos. There, a lot of them are like me, the piano, and it's often been like, I just wrote this and I kind of just want to like record it and be in this moment of where I am with this song or even with this like one verse I've written. And so I think that's been kind of freeing to be able to do that. Because also I think like for a while I kind of had this feeling of like, I can't release something unless it's like perfect, unless it's like very polished, and feeling like, you know, it needs to be very polished. And TikTok, I think, kind of helped me move through that in terms of like, no, it's not that deep at the end of the day. Like I can't put something that's not completely like, but it's like, I'm thinking more about it than probably anyone else will, but I think that was cool. And I've also played around. I like wrote this one song and created it. The song is about basically walking through New York and how I love to walk through New York as a way to like center and ground and just love it. And so the song is about that. And I basically took my phone one day and just took a bunch of videos of me walking through New York. And then I did a little like music video, if you can even call it that, and like posted that. So that was like really fun. But yeah, most of them are like pretty stripped down, but a few of them I've also shown kind of like the process of how I will like kind of build out a song on GarageBand, kind of showing like I'm choosing this loop, I'm gonna write a small piano part, kind of the beat, a few things I kind of know to play around with it, and like bringing it all together. And that's been like really fun to kind of like show that process and kind of how it moves through.
Yeah, it's like you can bring your audience behind the scenes with you and you can show the steps of making the song before it's perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
I will say whatever the name of that song ends up being, it's probably going to be my favorite of yours, because when I when I was in college, like I would literally walk from 116th Street all the way to NYU, like on a regular basis, because that's how much I like doing it. And like my mom, she grew up in Harlem and she said she used to do the same thing when she was younger. And so it's something that we like always really bonded over. But that resonates with me so deeply. Like there's no place like New York to go for a walk.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. Oh, that's amazing also. And like really cool that you and your mom like have that connection.
Absolutely. Hopefully, we'll see. I think New York is interesting. We were having this conversation earlier. Like it's a great place to be when, you know, you're kind of only taking care of yourself. It's a little bit harder when you have a family. And so like for me, I'm only in New York like 2 weeks out of the year for vacation. But I think it would be interesting, like if my kids like went to Columbia one day, like it would be nice to keep that train going.
Yeah, definitely. definitely. I feel like if you live here, it'll always have like a piece of your heart.
Absolutely. So, I want to start wrapping up, and I want to kind of bring back a couple of the threads that we started with in the beginning. I'm really curious who some of your favorite like contemporary artists are. I know in the beginning we were talking a lot about the influences that you have from your parents, but like, who are like some of the people that like you listen to today? Like, what is your Spotify top 10? Like?
I will say this is such a hard question for me. I will say like, this is like, it is a really challenging question.
You can drop as many names as you want. There is no limit.
I'll drop a few. I'm definitely going to drop a few. So I also will say like, I listen to, I think, a range of music in terms of like time frame. So like, I do like every single day listen to like Erykah Badu and like D'Angelo and like Marvin Gaye. Like those are like very like, I listen to them all day.
Oh my God. What was the D'Angelo album? Okay, I'm looking it up right now. Brown Sugar.
Yes.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Brown Sugar, that was my soundtrack for like a few months in high school. Oh my God.
He's literally so amazing. So those are like some very like listen to all the time. I absolutely adore and look up to Leanne LaHavas. Okay. She's based in the UK. Her voice is insanely amazing. Her lyricism is great, and like her production is great. Like, she's just an overall amazing artist. I also love Emily King. She has, really amazing lyrics. Also, again, voice. I think just generally overall amazing artist. I love Tank and the Bangas. They're super cool. I don't know if you're familiar with them. They're from New Orleans. I got started in New Orleans, and they actually, their Tiny Desk is really good. They like Tiny Desks, and they do a combination of singing plus spoken word, but then they also are just like super cool in their sound and have a lot of versatility in the way they sing, which is cool. I love PJ Morton. Yebba. Love Yebba.
Yes.
Daniel Caesar, Leon Bridges. I like Cleo Soul a lot. Her new album is really great. Who else? Let's see. I'm looking at like my most recent.
Yeah, Yebba has a great song with Shmino, who is one of my favorite artists.
Yes, I love
Shmino. That's a name I recognize.
Yes. I really like Lizzie McAlpine in terms of lyricism. She's one of those ones that, again, is maybe like a little bit outside of the usual genres I listen to, but she writes about love in such interesting ways. And I think a lot of times love is written about in a very like one-dimensional way of like either I'm very in love or I'm heartbroken, but she kind of like looks at it at different stages of the relationship, which is definitely super cool. I mean, obviously, SZA. I really like this artist named Arez Zobari.
Okay.
She's really cool. I also love Robert Glasper. He does really cool stuff with bringing like artists together. Yeah, I mean, I love like Lizzo.
This is a phenomenal list. I've been following everyone as you brought them up because now I have a lot of new music to listen to. I'm curious,
Chloe X Halle as well.
Chloe X Halle.
And like, so Chloe, she now is like doing a solo career, but their music together is like so good. I hope they continue to do music together in the future. But they're sisters, and they're actually like Beyonce is their mentor. And like they've been under her wing since they were like 11 and like 14 or something. So
interesting. And speaking of Beyonce, she's got an album coming out this summer too.
Yes. So excited.
Wow. So like when you think about the people you admire, the artists you admire. Do you try to make your music like their music? Or like how do you think about that?
I think I try to emulate like the feeling I have when listening to their music and trying to like make it that I have that same feeling when I'm making my own music and like, or when I listen back to the music I have. Because I think like it can be kind of tricky to exactly like, you know, copy people. And that's not what you said, but like, you know, to take, I think, too much from others. So I think I try to start from like somewhere that's very much like authentic and my own. And then whenever I'm like, you know, kind of going through that process, if there's like elements I can draw in that remind me of, say, like, ooh, this is, you know, giving like kind of Emily King vibes or right. something like that, it can be really fun to add in, or even just playing around with like, say, like a riff or, you know, like a little small instrumental flair. But I think in general, I try to kind of emulate that like that feeling in terms of like listening to the music.
Okay. So on that note, this is the question I want to end with. When you think about your career and the music that you will continue to put out, like what is the feeling that you want like your listeners to have when they hear your voice, when they hear your music?
That is a good question. I think there are multiple things, because I also would love to create music that spans across different emotions and kind of like I love a song that can just make you feel kind of torn apart, but then like at the end it kind of brings you back together. So I would love to kind of have that feeling. And then I would love to have a song where it's like, wow, this is just putting me in an amazing mood. Like this is just something I can truly like walk down, you know, Broadway, East Howison, across the bridge to, and just like really vibe on. And then I think another, just anything that can make people feel seen, like any lyrics or music that just really makes people be like, oh, I'm not alone in that thought, or like, I'm not alone in that feeling. I would love to make music that does that.
I like that too, because then that's so like flexible, because there's so many different ways that people can feel, so many different emotions to express. But it's like, if you have like a song that kind of hits on every single one of them, that would be an amazing catalog.
Definitely. That's the goal.
Cool. Well, Raleigh, I really, really appreciate you spending an hour with me and allowing me to ask all of these questions. Before we end, like, is there anything that you'd like to say? Like any last thing you wanted to maybe express, or something you want to say to the audience? Like anything that's on your mind?
Yeah, I think first of all, I just want to thank you. This has been a really wonderful conversation, and definitely has been like, I feel like you created a really lovely space to talk about all these things. And so just really appreciate that and your time and your, you know, kind of thoughtful guidance throughout this past hour. And I think I just want to, you know, kind of say to the audience, I hope that other people can, you know, kind of follow their passions in the way that resonates with them. And, you know, of course, I would love for you to listen to my music. So if you would like, you can go to my Instagram, Raleigh Kona Kalfas, streaming on Spotify, Apple Music, everything. I hope you can find some love, light, sadness, the whole range of it all. Just feel definitely very grateful.
Got you. I lied. I do have one last question for you. Your middle name is Kona. Is that correct?
So it is very confusing. Ralitza Kona is actually my first name. It's hyphenated. And so I went by Raleigh in college, but then I've kind of gone through this whole thing of like thinking about my name, and Ralitza is from my Greek grandmother, and then Kona is the Hawaiian side of my family. And so I also now kind of love going by all three names, like Raleigh, Ralitza, and Ralitza Kona. So I wanted to kind of have my full name in my artist profile to kind of show, you know, like, this is who I am. This is like the totality of where I'm from. And just generally trying to be kind of like, you know, bringing my full self to this music.
Nice. I love that decision. I made a similar decision after college. Having your full name, like, there's just something so like, there's power in it. I don't know, when you have like this really long 100%. Name and you like make people use it. Like, I like that idea.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Pacing through 250 square feet for the fourth time. Need to charge my brain for working all this overtime. Not sure if I should eat or sleep, or if I'll just be fine. Don't need no Amazon, but I'll keep the Prime. I see just how you're moving. Late night thinking you're smoking. Personally, I could go for a treat. Personally, I never turned on a sweet. I slide next to my baby. You turn on his hot face. And personally, I don't care much for rest. Personally, I only settle for the best. Yeah, yeah. Itching to find myself in your view just one night. Need that 3D, can't make room for a satellite. Not sure if I should hit rewind or if I'll improvise. Don't need the DVR, we'll just make it live. You see just how I'm moving. Replay, starting round two. And personally, I could go for a treat. Personally, I never turned on a sweet. You're the only one that I care about, what you see. And I know, oh, I know that it don't mean a thing. When it comes down to it, only matters what we feel.